Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
Art of Construction Tribe, Devin Tilley here. I just smashed a donut in my face, and this donut had oozing blood jelly going all over the place. Yes, Voodoo Donuts here in Denver, Colorado. I'm looking at the guys from Unum Collaborative, and man, I get stoked when I get to have a podcast with the people here of the Art of Construction Tribe in Denver, Colorado, because we're going out globally with all kinds of awesome projects with the Digital Built Week and bringing in all this amazing machine learning and all this cool stuff. But man, I love when I get to go down and where my roots are here in Denver, Colorado, and talk about the art of construction and get in and talk some case studies. So these are guys that have worked with my local company, Mountain View Window and Door, and they're all about taking a variety of scales and media and blending the domain of art and architecture and industrial design and fashion. And in the pre-interview, had some great conversation about some of the projects they're working on. And we're going to go in and have a fireside chat with Jim Pfeiffer and Adam Steinbach, the leaders and visionaries of Unum Collaborative. Lock and load. What's your favorite beverage?
My favorite beverage is definitely coffee.
All right.
There's comes and goes as far as beverages, but coffee's been a staple since ninth grade. So
awesome. So are you one of those like crazy coffee connoisseurs that like when I go, and I actually was at today, was I had this business meeting at this awesome coffee shop locally called Sessions Coffee, and I'm like, macchiato, because I'm used to the Starbucks, and he's like, so like just in a shot glass? I'm like, I don't know, I want like a big fancy coffee. He's like, oh, you want a latte? I'm like, fair enough. You know, I'm not one of those guys. I just like it. So, but are you a connoisseur of coffee?
No. Yeah. I grew up on Folgers.
There you go.
I'll drink whatever.
All right. Cool. Well, what's the favorite place you've traveled?
I think the favorite place I've traveled is Costa Rica. Ooh, wow. My wife and I went there probably about 6 years ago. Rented a little Jimny, it was called, a tiny little SUV, and just cruised around the country and got into some exploration.
That's two in a row. The last interview I did was, they come out at different times, but the last interview I did was Costa Rica. We've got a lot of those. It's a magical place for us Denver folks. You hear that a lot on Costa Rica. What's one story from that experience?
It was a few stories, but we got to go zip lining through, I believe it was Mesa Verde, and we went over this valley. I mean, we had to be 300-400 feet up. I don't know how they connected this cable, but I mean, we went from basically one hill over to this other hill. And as we were going across, you do it double and you don't even know where you're going to land. You're so far away. And as you get closer and closer, you see this hole opening in the trees and you end up going through the trees back into the canopy. And it was incredible.
That's cool, man. Well, what's your favorite hobby or interest outside of the art of construction that we all passionately live in?
Well, I mean, outdoors in general, but I think fly fishing has been rather captivating since I moved to Colorado. Me and a few buddies took it up about 8 years ago, and anytime we plant anything outside, I take a look at what the water's like and see if we can get close and drop a line in. So,
where'd you move to Colorado from?
From Philadelphia.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Well, we'll get to know a little bit more about Jim, but let's get the speed round. We got Adam Steinbach also in here. Adam, what's your favorite beverage?
I think I'd have to say a old fashioned from Lady Jane.
All right, there we go. We got both sides of the spectrum there, coffee and an old fashioned. I love it. What's the favorite place you've traveled?
So I was lucky enough in my undergrad to actually live in Paris for about 3 months and do a study over there. And I think just being able to immerse myself in the culture and see the architecture and being able to travel throughout Europe was pretty special, especially for kind of a young architect or student of architecture.
Awesome. And what's your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction arena we call the AOC?
So I think fly fishing is definitely top of the list. Jim and I also bond and take trips and doing that, but painting and basically just painting and drawing, you know, that extension of the art form that we don't do enough of now as young entrepreneurs. And if I ever get a chance to just get away and sit down and paint, then I'm pretty happy. So
awesome. Well, tell us about your company, Jim, Unum Collaborative. And Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I've gotten to know you guys, you're more the technical, and Adam, you're more of the design guy, the artist. And but the technical guy, I love it when he says "Wahoo" on the zip line. That's some diehard technical pushing the envelope. So what's Unum? What does Unum stand for, and what is Unum Collaborative all about?
So Unum is it's Latin for one, and it basically came out of the phrase "E pluribus unum," which means out of many one. And Adam and I both come from small firms and sort of a small firm mentality where you have to put on a lot of hats. You have to keep your mind open to things that you might not necessarily know, and make sure you don't let your ego get in the way of anything. So the ethos of Unum is keep your mind open. If you let all the inputs kind of reach you and come together with that design or in that design, you'll end up with the best possible result.
Love it. So the design guy did the technical guy get it right?
Yeah, I think, and you know what? We get asked that question a lot, especially, you know, most of it's how do I say this and what?
Yeah.
And the real, I think one of the driving factors for us was, you know, we didn't want to name it after ourselves. We didn't want to be the figurehead in a firm like that. We wanted it to be kind of bigger and representative of bigger than us. And kind of this idea of having collaborative in the name and knowing that it takes an army essentially to get a lot of these things done. It's not one person. So we want throughout our entire process to kind of recognize the team and focus on the team. And so that was kind of the ethos and the driving for naming it Unum Collaborative.
Yeah, that's a key concept there, AOC Tribe, to think about, is that you have to think bigger than yourselves, especially of how things are shifting with the technology and how the handoffs work and where the architecture. And I truly believe we're in such an exciting time as far as where things are coming to where the artist can go back to being artists and using these technical tools to do what you're best at of designing. But if you just stamp your name on everything and say, what's in it for me? That's a little bit harder. So I think that's super cool, guys. And that's where I was so jazzed to have you come into Studio AOC and talk about this one team. And that's when the art of construction is, that's all about this open source that people ask me all the time, like, who's your sponsor? And you don't hear 8 minutes of that like most podcasts, because that's what this source is. Like, we're building a tribe that's for you listening to connect the dots. And that's how we make this all work together. So that's why I was so pumped to have a local forward-thinking company. There's lots of other cool people that we've had in the past. Go back and Lindsay Kruger that you guys have worked with from Nevis. There's so many cool architecture stuff going on here in Denver. What's your take here that we're here at home today for the global audience listening? What's one thing that comes to mind of the architecture Unum scene here in Denver?
I think, you know, Denver has a very eclectic maker scene that's coming out of the community. I think, you know, you look at small-time furniture makers, craftsmen, millworkers, and for us, being a small firm, we gravitate towards people like that and creatives like that and recognize that, you know, these are influencers that we can kind of rely on and collaborate with to move our design further. We see this adaptation of digital and emerging technologies here in Denver a little behind, say, you know, the New York and the LA, but I think you're seeing the transplants and the academia start to catch up here. So you start to see the implementation of these technologies. And one of the things that we were kind of founded on was the idea of, we want to adopt these things, and how can these things help a small firm compete with the larger firms, and how can we use these new technologies to sort of help us on the design side, but also as a communication tool to maybe push design and push the needle of design further.
Love it. So that's exactly the answer of when we were doing the pre-interview and why I asked you that question is that you guys, what really resonated to me is that you guys talked about how you're really trying to take a different approach to architecture. And you talked about all about supporting the group that you work with. And when we get into our case studies, that's why I asked you that question is that it's not always about always being the first, but you don't want to be the last either. And so that's where I really see you guys pushing the envelope, but learning from that of that one team and looking at those different approaches. So let's go in and I want to talk through that different approach of when we say different approach, what do we mean by that, right? So you had talked to us about Cholan, which is a restaurant downtown that, you know, I said, if all the projects, what's a project that comes to mind? So Jim, tell me about the Cholan ceiling renovation.
Yeah, so the Cholan ceiling was one of our first challenges as Unum and first opportunities really to be as collaborative as possible. And so we worked with Twig on that. Twig was the fabricator for the ceiling and then Hive did the contracting on it. But we presented three ideas to the owners group. And they picked one that I think we were most attracted to, but we weren't really sure how we were going to build it. And so it took a lot of working with Hive and Twig to get through that, to really understand, you know, how was this going to come together? And was this going to be able to be installed in the 4-day period we had to install it? Was it going to be accessible for maintenance in the future? And then really, ultimately, is it going to be as spectacular as we all have it in our minds? So I think as a whole, it represented for us the idea that collaboration really does give a result that's greater than the sum of its parts. The concept itself was trying to take this idea of a bait casting net, and that which was tied back to the Asian cuisine that Cholan offers. And represent the sort of tension and beauty in its suspension. Like, so as you cast out this base casting net, you see there's a moment in time where it's pulling and it's about to fall and drape onto the water, but there's this pulling, it's rooted in like the strength of the person that's throwing it. And we wanted to try to capture the ripple along with the tensions. And so there was a lot going on there. And I mean, Adam can speak a little bit more to that as far as the modeling goes, but he developed the model in Rhino with Grasshopper, and we basically sent that off to Patrick over at Twig, and he was able to work some magic with it. So
I want to go back and just to lay it out to say, what was the problem? What did they ask you to do? And what was the solution? And so, Adam, if you can kind of say, tell me, what was the problem? What was the problem you were, I'm assuming it's a restaurant, maybe a little loud or something like that?
Right. So Cholan's actually about 8 years old, and they've done very well in that location at 16th and Blake. But it's a corner dining room. It's got concrete deck, concrete floors, and glass all around it. So we did actually some acoustical studies beforehand, and the reverberation time was at 2.1 or something like that. Pretty high end or high level of reverberation, and that was one of the constant complaints from the guest was, hey, it's too loud and I can't hear the person across from me. So
it takes away a little bit from a nice conversation.
Absolutely.
Right?
And it's such a, I mean, the menu is fantastic. It's a beautiful restaurant. And so one of our challenges was to kind of remedy this, but do it in a way that tied into their aesthetic, maybe brought something new and interesting, but still was a reflecting element of their brand. And you know, we went through a couple different iterations, or actually, I'm sorry, a couple different concepts first of, you know, tying into their menu, what things that Lon and Christopher had drawn from in their influences for why they wanted to start the restaurant. And so when we landed on the net one, like Jim had mentioned, it was one that we were excited about, but also incredibly nervous about, like, how are we going to do this? But the net itself, outside of its formal response and this curving wooden surface, is actually an acoustical component as well. It above that is acoustical panels that actually absorb and allow the reverberation to get trapped above, And actually the undulating surfaces reflect that sound and don't reverberate it in a the way parallel surfaces actually do. So it works as a as both a visual component and a functional operative component. To the design.
That's cool. Like locally, we had Bill Allen with Evolve Labs, and we talked about orchestrating this network of like playing, you know, a song and of all the notes and the keys and coming together. And he actually, he talked about it was like a roof structure on the front of a building that, you know, the budget and trying to make that work and Grasshopper, just like you're talking about. And these are the things, Tribe, you got to really understand is that when I asked him, would all the projects, and these guys got some really cool stuff that we've collaborated on, and on the forefront, you'd say a ceiling. But like when you painted that picture, I'm seeing you and your fly fishing that you're into and taking those nature aspirations in a restaurant that Cholan is awesome. And I was there before that, like, i.e. if you come to Denver, go there and get the pot stickers or dynamite, like it's awesome. But I actually remember being there. That's back when I was young and hip before I had kids, but it was loud. Like it was hard to hear in there. So now I'm totally intrigued to go back. So think about what I just said there, like that story about what you did and what you did. Now it's a whole nother story, and you're either growing or dying, and you've built that scene that's passionate to you guys, and you're talking about that. So what would be your take on my synopsis of that, Jim?
Well, I mean, I think that's what we were after, you know, and I think that's what the owners group was after. Like, they needed a facelift. They needed something to reinvigorate. They have an ideal location in Denver, but they needed something to kind of have a re-grand opening for themselves.
You wouldn't think on the forefront a ceiling would be such a big deal. But
right.
In a space like that, it's everything. Like if the experience, and that's where you said back at the beginning, you talked about how you talked with them of like what their visions, and you looked at the menu and looked at this, but you found the biggest pain and you fixed it.
Right.
And that makes you feel good and is a solution that you want to talk about, right?
Well, yeah. And I think what's important about the entire process was not just the result. I think the sculptural element is beautiful, and we're incredibly happy with the way it turned out. I think it's the experience that comes along with it as well. So the collaboration that it took to work with our fabricators and do mock-up after mock-up to say, hey, what are the limits of this material? And are we bending this wood, because it's made out of a quarter-inch plywood, are we bending this thing too much? Is it going to crack? Is it going to break? What are our limits? How do we fasten it? How do we panelize it so that it can be installed? All these metrics that kind of go into it that had to be resolved to create this beautiful sort of composition.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you're talking about the wood and the bending of the wood. I think one of the things that we try to do often, and some of the other projects that we've got, we'll speak a little bit more to that as well, but really exploring materials and seeing their limits. And I know, you know, that happens a lot in architecture and design, but using digital fabrication and seeing how far can we actually push this material when it's beyond standard craft. And I think the wood was one thing, and we were playing with like different PVCs the acrylics that we were seeing, you know, would that go further than the wood? What species of wood is going to go far? Even the model itself, like at the beginning, it was really undulating and really tight, but we found that the wood just wouldn't do it. So we kind of pushed the wood as far as it could possibly go in order to achieve as much character and texture as we could.
And you talked, I think you said was digital fabrication.
Uh-huh.
That's a key word you just said right there, because with these new tools, I think earlier you talked Grasshopper is what you guys used. Yeah. And I'm finding a lot of people I'm talking to, Grasshopper is becoming this tool that does, because it can do all of this computational design stuff for you to help push the limits based on data to help versus just go and build it 100 times. That probably wouldn't have worked that way, right? Because that's how it used to be done before we had these tools,
right,
to bend wood and look at different mediums and different materials. So digital fabrication, the power of digital fabrication with your artist background, that's what we're talking about, connecting the technology with the handshakes. Would you agree with that, Adam?
I would. I think one of the biggest things that we need to figure out during our process is, I mean, with the technology today, with unlimited resources today, we can basically model and design anything. It's really, how do you take something that's in that computer environment, in that platform, and move it to the physical realm? And how do you build something and actually build it in budget, you know, build it with the material qualities that it needs? So that's where this collision of artistry and technology sort of meets. And
that's really where we feel like the re-collision of architects and constructors is happening. You know, the idea that architects and designers have so much more of a hand in the actual construction and fabrication of projects is a direct result of the new tools that digital fabrication technology is introducing.
I totally agree. I find myself, as I'm having these conversations where I ask the questions, and really, you know, 150 times doing this and learning from amazing people like Unum. And as I'm going through this, I have to tell this story, is that next week we're opening in our showroom that we call our experience centers. We're building out this like mock studio loft apartment. And I found myself like, I'm either the dumbest person in the room or the smartest person in the room. And I go learning about machine learning and all computational design. And I didn't even know what that stuff meant before I had these podcasts, because I just grew up in the supply channel world. And earlier today, we're finalizing this whole space. And it's a mock-up, right? So it's this experience that you experience a living room, a kitchen, and a bathroom, and a closet, and this whole space. But it's a small space, so we have to be really smart about what we physically put in the space. And we're going through this, and like, what furniture should we put to stage the living room? And I'm like, you know what, guys? We don't need to stage the living room. What we need to use is augmented reality, and go as basic as that is to, you can go to IKEA or other tools to just show somebody to place the furniture in there, because we're not in the furniture business, but we're in the business of creating experiences. So I just grabbed the app and showed the owner, and then just started placing it and walking, showing that. He's like, oh my gosh, like, we're not putting furniture anymore. We're not going to spend the money for furniture from that tool. And now we're showing that showcase. So when we get done, I'll go back there and show you that if you don't know what I'm talking about. But what's your take on futuristic tools like that and how to push Grasshopper and AR and computational design?
Yeah, I mean, virtual reality is something that we've embraced from the very beginning of Unum. And we actually gave a talk on the use of virtual reality in design last year at the Denver Design Week. But it's been something that, not to be cliche, but it's been groundbreaking for us. I mean, the communication that we have with clients in the virtual reality world, as opposed to the world of plans, elevations, and renderings, is just, there's no competing, because the virtual reality world and the augmented reality world allows you to present architecture as a space, which is what it is. You know, architecture is the experience of walking into a building and feeling the height or feeling the volume and seeing the different views that are being set up. And you can start to do that with plans and elevations, but you can't, even with a photorealistic rendering, you're not getting there. So to make a long answer long, it's something we are absolutely on board with, and we see it going further and further. And basically we're using it to our advantage as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, and I think to add to that, I mean, we've embraced it early, and we embrace it often. We use it in multiple stages of our process. So we'll use it in early schematics almost internally. So we'll do internal charrettes where we have, you know, our team go in there, or even the contractors go in there and review things so that everybody has a better understanding of the design. But then we're also able at the end to, you know, when you start developing and talking about, you know, furnishings, fixtures, materials, lighting, all of these things can now start to be implored and quickly updated, so that you get this real time feedback, immediate feedback, that you can make decisions quicker. Yeah. And I think, you know, what we focus on, or when we're possibly our biggest use of the tool, is when we are pushing those limits a little bit more and the client just doesn't quite get it yet. Having virtual reality and having an experience to go in there and to visualize it and watch a client try to touch your design and how they move through it and how they start to see things that maybe you hadn't even started to think about, and be able to have that conversation fluently with them there. For example, the Cholon and the Blanchard project, I think, were two that were basically we could show them as many renderings as we wanted, but the minute we got them in there is when we really had that anchor selling point.
Okay. And so when you mean get them in there, meaning in the virtual reality space?
In the virtual environment, yeah.
Yeah, for Blanchard, we took the set over to the site, and we had the contractor there and then the owners there. And Blanchard was an interesting one because we were trying to connect the dairy block itself, the actual alley, with Fetch Markets, and basically trying to expand on the concept of the dairy block, which is to promote retail pedestrian traffic. And you know, having them there and then going into the headset, seeing what it will be, and then popping back out and seeing, oh yeah, that's going to be right up there. You know, it was huge. And then also huge having the contractor there getting inside and having more of an understanding of why certain moves were being made and why we felt certain moves were important and something to hold on to, as far as, you know, every project goes through budget cuts. So let's make sure we keep this part because it's doing this, and it's easier to have that conversation.
Yeah, and the more that you can take the fear out of the contractor, the more you can start having that discussion, right?
And they're rightfully so. Why this is for contractors and affiliates.
Yeah.
You have to really understand the contractor. Like, you have to add value. Like, I think a lot of contractors, I'm going to bring a whole video game to the job site and we're going to sit down and show you how this is done. They're probably saying, I don't have time for that. Right. Like, but that's what this podcast is all about, is for contractors and affiliates to actually see the power of what is a video game that's just funny and over here, but what's real stuff.
Yeah.
And it's the partnerships that you take the most risks are the ones you usually talk about, right? Why this, you probably had a few days where you're like, oh boy, this Cholon thing is a little scary. And you mentioned how they took the design that you're most excited, but then you had those tools and you used the virtual reality to help get you and the customer comfortable, right?
Well, the one thing you just said there about, you know, this being for contractors and trying to create a stronger relationship, we have great relationships with the contractors we work with, and we take pride in listening to everybody. Like I said at the beginning, you know, that's what the ethos of Unum really is. Like, bring everything in, let's hear what everybody has to say, and then also let's make sure we're all talking about the same thing. And one of the other things that virtual reality is letting us do is, you know, a contractor can get in there and we can see like everything they're seeing. So they can point at something, we can have a conversation about it, and they know that we're seeing what they're talking about, and we know that they're seeing what they're talking about. And
you mean we don't always see the same things on plans?
Well, you can't be sure, you know? And for both directions.
I've never had anybody actually say, that's not what I wanted that window to look like.
No, but it opens it up so much where, you know, you're just on the same playing field, and it's like, it almost becomes like a mock CA exercise, a mock construction administration exercise, where you're out in the field looking at a problem, like figuring out how to solve it. And, it, you know, we find it really strengthens the bonds between all the people, you know, owner, architect, contractor, being able to stand there and look at something together and solve problems. It makes for a very strong team every time.
And you're doing this before any crew is on site, any movement, so all of this is happening, all of this discussion is happening before really any expense is really...
When moving a wall is still free.
Right, yeah.
No doubt. So GM, I love it when I go to a website and a company has a defined core values, because it's great to talk about one and I believe it myself, but the world is what's in it for me too. So you have to really, what's your identity? And what are your core values of one Unum? How does that work?
Sure. So, I mean, we have four basic core values, advocacy, craft, innovation, and collaboration. And I think the last two, innovation and collaboration, have been basically what we've been sitting here talking about so far. We want to push the boundaries on technology and processes, but with craft, you know, we want to make sure that everything we're doing is, again, pushing the boundaries and being as good as it can possibly be. But advocacy is also something that when we set out on this, we wanted to make sure that the moves we were making and the designs we were doing were thinking about the community as a whole. I think architecture, city planning, and all of that really if you're too inward focused, it's just not going to be a successful project. So we want to make sure that, you know, every project that we're doing contributes to the neighborhoods if it's a residence, contributes to the block of retail spaces if it's a restaurant or a retail space. So, community-oriented design.
And I like when I went through this with my companies, it was a big deal. It's hard to do that. This is hard stuff to work on your business. So I love to ask and hear what makes you guys tick. If you ask me, it's four core values. Everything we do is about doing the right thing, even if no one's watching. Problem solving. Don't just bring the problem. Bring three potential solutions. Get shit done. Don't need to say more about that. But I always do it with a commitment to excellence. Mm-hmm. And so everything we do, it has to fit those four things to get that done, just like you talk about your core values. So something to think about. So Adam, we've been asking, as we've really been working hard on the Art of Construction, is to take these futuristic technologies and what people probably should or shouldn't be doing today with the future of technology and construction to get more of those handshakes together. What is your crystal ball for the future of technology and construction?
So, I mean, I can see, I think in the future we'll probably be eliminating construction documents and working from modeling themselves in the field. I could see contractors and architects collaborating in a virtual environment throughout the entire construction process, and not just, you know, in the front end and then a delivery of construction documents. I think the model, the BIM model and the components themselves are going to be as important as the construction documents, if not the way specifications are.
You mean the model is actually what gets built, and you get to see it, and that's actually what gets built.
Exactly.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. The information and the key is key, because in the old world of building information modeling turned into building value engineer red line and over budget and over time.
Right.
That's where this stuff becomes a real valuable tool. So I couldn't agree more. So Jim, to close us out, we always ask, what's that one thing for contractors and affiliates? If there's one thing you had to leave of all the lessons learned you've had, what's the one lesson you'd give them to go out and crush it and grow their business?
Honestly, it's just, you know, open communication. You know, be upfront about everything. Be upfront about what you do know. Be upfront about what you don't know, about your successes, about your failures. Everybody's got something to learn from everybody else. So speak up when you know, because somebody there doesn't, and listen when you don't know, because somebody does.
Awesome. Adam, take us home.
So I'd say, you know, nobody can be successful on their own. I think I'll echo what Jim said too, is you can't do everything in a vacuum. It takes a support team to do it. And, you know, I think one thing that's sort of missing in this discussion is maybe the idea of employing empathy. You know, I think it's important understanding that, you know, what you're designing and what you're doing has an impact on the surrounding world, and doing things that are for the better, and making sure that the work that you produce is bringing value to the world that we live in today.
Awesome. Hey, we're big fans of you on the Art of Construction. Thanks so much for coming and telling us your story.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Art of Construction Tribe, gold again. I hope you enjoyed that. These guys, when he talked about empathy, let me tell you a quick story that was not on the show before they left. As they came in here, and I own this window and door company here in Denver, and I've been working so hard on this global megaphone for you to grow your business. And we're talking through this, and they're, give them credit, to Trish, their marketing gal, reached out on the message board, and I got constantly people reaching out to me, and she just, the way she reached out was the right way, and it was in Denver, and I'm like, let's talk with these guys. And talking with them, and we're going through the conversation, and I'm like, well, the studio's in my experience center. And he's like, yeah, we got three projects going with you. I'm like, yes, it's actually working. Like, why am I doing this? Like, why am I doing this? Everyone asks, is because I'm being authentic and growing a real audience that means something. And then when they came in here, they brought a box of Voodoo Donuts that I'm trying to be healthy, but man, it was just made my day. So I go home every night, and we talk about our rose and thorn with my four-year-old, and my rose tonight's gonna be Voodoo Donuts in this conversation. So something for you to think about, AOC Tribe. Crush it out there, have fun, and keep paying attention to these technologies, because it's not just a ceiling, it's an experience. Crush it out there, tribe.